Right now, I'm standing in a hole. A 300-foot deep hole, to be exact. But even though I'm down here, I'm still connected to the entire job site because I have the new Sprint Direct Connect with apps like Workforce Locator that lets me know my foreman, Mike, is...
Yeah, I'm here.
And I have three times the coverage, so I know that my most important delivery...
Just arrived.
And as part of the fastest push-to-talk, I can assemble my team the moment I need them. Guys?
On our way.
So now I can focus on turning this hole into a hotel.
Upgrade to the new Done. The new Sprint Direct Connect with three times the coverage and access to the fastest push-to-talk experience nationwide. Now when you buy one Motorola Admiral Rugged smartphone for $49.99, you'll get one free. To upgrade, call 800-SPRINT-1 or visit a Sprint store near you. Offer ends 1/10/13. Offer available to corporate liable accounts. Excludes taxes. Two-year agreement. $36 activation. Up to $350 early termination fee for devices. Fastest claim based on initial setup time for push-to-talk calls originating in Nextel or Sprint-owned 3G coverage. Coverage claim based on comparison of Nextel National Network square miles to Sprint National Network inclusive of roaming. Restrictions apply. See store.
What's your plan B? Is what you're doing taking you toward or away from your goals? Are you fulfilled? You can start over. The past is the past. This is a revolution of hope. We provide a way for extra income part or full-time with a mission and vision of hope designed to inspire. This is the greatest movement on earth. Make a commitment to yourself and ask, what do you want your life to be like? Join us in our revolution of hope. Go to tellmeplanb.com or call 803-431-0775.
And now, the show that covers politics from all angles, Inside Politics with David Califf.
Inside Politics with David Califf, the show that covers the issues that affect you. I hope everybody's having a great Monday, top of the week, beginning of the week, and we've got a lot to get to on this Monday show. But first, before we get into tonight's show, Rick Perry, Governor Rick Perry of Texas, has announced that he's not going to be running for re-election in Texas, where we all hope he runs for president. And if you look at his record as governor in Texas, he's got some accomplishments that he can brag about. One of those accomplishments is, as governor, Texas has led the nation in pollution, polluting the atmosphere, polluting the land. Also, Texas leads the nation in uninsured people. So, congratulations, Rick Perry. Your state leads the nation in polluters and leads the nation in most uninsured people. And there's a lot more other accomplishments that we can go through. Well, they're not really accomplishments, but to Rick Perry, he's probably proud of them. And Rick Perry, when you look at these misachievements rather than achievements, only one word, oops. But tonight, it's all about the minimum wage. And one of the things that the president called for in his State of the Union address was raising the minimum wage. The president, during that State of the Union address this year, called for raising the minimum wage to $9 an hour. When we think it should be $10 or more, but $9 is a start. And when you think about the minimum wage, it's only been risen one time in the last 19 years, and that's when Nancy Pelosi was in a Democrat-controlled House, and that was just for a short couple of years. The only time that it's been risen in the last 19, almost 20 years. And according to a recent study by two economists that work for the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago, that's right, the Federal Reserve of all folks, state that raising the minimum wage, and they don't say 10 or more dollars, they put it at the $9 the president called for, would have a huge benefits for the economy in terms of stimulating the economy. They say raising the minimum wage to $9.25 an hour would raise household spending by about $48 billion. That's 0.3% of GDP, gross domestic product. And, you know, this makes a lot of sense because many people that would benefit from the minimum wage are the lowest income earners, and they're going to use that money to spend it back into the economy, not saving that money. And this whole notion that we hear politicians say that, including Speaker Boehner, say that, oh, you know, the president's call for raising the minimum wage and others is going to hurt the economy? No, there's no evidence to show that, including this study by economists at the Federal Reserve. So it's time that Congress does something, quit being do-nothing, and work with the president, do some of his calls for action at the State of the Union address earlier at the beginning of this year. So far, zero of what the president has called for has been passed by this Congress. And that includes letting workers have a living wage. And starting at $9 an hour, that's a start. Joining us tonight to discuss this topic is Mr. Walter Brash, syndicated columnist and author, and regular contributor to the show. And hello, Walter. Thanks for joining us live on Inside Politics.
Hello, David.
Hi. It's a pleasure to have you on. And, you know, raising the minimum wage, you know, we didn't need this study to let us know that. There's been other studies, but this is just more proof in the pudding. That this whole notion that, you know, you can't raise the minimum wage, it hurts jobs, it hurts the economy, it not only helps the economy, it helps stimulate it substantially.
Exactly. And here's another issue. If you're making $8 an hour, chances are you're in poverty wages and you might be supplementing that income possibly with food stamps or maybe even if you have a larger family, some welfare. So I don't understand how the Republicans can possibly come up with their stupid arguments. Because by raising the minimum wage, you probably will take some people off of the public dole, which is kind of what they want to do to everybody, no matter whether they deserve it or not. So raising the minimum wage would also benefit all American taxpayers.
Yeah, you're right. And then this whole notion that there may be some listeners saying, well, I don't care. I'm not close to the minimum wage. You should, because when you raise the wages for the lowest income earners, that helps raise the standards for wage earners across the income levels.
Yeah, and certainly the argument about if you raise the minimum wage, more people are going to have more buying power, which helps business. What it is really absurd is to think that a working individual and her family or his family could live on a minimum wage. So if they have two minimum wage jobs, or maybe a little bit more than minimum wage. But minimum wage is not been raised, as you said, for so many years, and yet Congress keeps raising their wages. There's something wrong here.
Yeah, they're quick to raise theirs one time in the last 19 years, and the only time it was risen was when Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats took over the House. That was one of the first things they did. They had the House for 4 years, and they raised the minimum wage the only time during that four-year span. You look at the other 10 years, the Republicans have been in control since 94, 93, zero times they've risen a minimum wage. That includes speakers such as Newt Gingrich, Hassert, and John Boehner.
Oh, yeah, and they're certainly not starving for any kind of money. They're making, the leaders of Congress are over $200,000 a year, and of course they don't care about the people making, say, $7.75 a year.
And the people that are making $7.25 an hour are working much harder. They work almost 365 days a year. The average Congress member only works one-third of the year. So
yes, that is true. And based upon the last 2 years, I don't think they're even working.
Yeah, one-third of the time would be generous. It's really more like one-tenth.
Yes, exactly.
And this study says that it would raise $48 billion in household spending. $48 billion. You know, most of that money is going to go back into the economy.
Definitely. It's going to benefit all business. But apparently, if you're let's just pretend a chain restaurant, and you want to have minimum wage, you're going to hire high school students. So right there, you're not going to, you know, you're going to have a situation of using basically a 16-year-old with a car who needs to pay for that car with a minimum wage, the insurance, the gas, if they don't go to mommy and daddy. So we're basically saying, we will allow this kind of labor at the expense of other people not being able to get a job to support their families.
And you know, that's one of the Republican talking points is, oh, you know, these are just high school kids anyway. But the economy's changed where a large portion of minimum wage workers, including the fast food industry, are over the age of 25 and actually household income earners. And according to one study, that this economic recovery is being, one part of the boost has been low-income jobs. 58% of the jobs created with this economy have been low-income jobs. And so raising the minimum wage would be a huge boost to the economy because so many of our jobs are maybe not minimum wage, but we're around the minimum wage.
And you know, when they add up the minimum wage, as it is, even at $9 an hour, let's pretend that they're going to get $9 an hour. That's all. That's about $18,700 a year. Now, out of that $18,700, that generally, since most companies that pay only minimum wage don't pay for many medical benefits, so the individual is going to have to pay for medical benefits, rent, probably $4,000 to $5,000 a year for rent, or a mortgage if they have a house, and other expenses like gas to get to their job. They're impoverished even at $9 an hour.
And that's what makes this debate even more laughable, is they don't even want to raise it to $9. And you're right. The president called for $9 an hour, and Elizabeth Warren said, and we've said on this show as well, that if you look at cost of living and inflation, it really should be more at $20 an hour. But to even get it at $9, Boehner and Company won't even squeeze the needle at $9 an hour. Really, it should be $10 or more.
And you know, the real reason is the Republicans know that the people making $9 an hour or $8 an hour aren't going to have much money to contribute to a political campaign. They tend to be the poorer people. The poorer people tend to be more Democrats or not even affiliated with the party. The Republicans tend to make a little bit more as a party than $9 or $8 an hour. So, therefore, the Republicans are very brilliant. If we, you know, probably, you know, they're thinking if we raise the minimum wage to like $11 an hour, some of these people might be able to get more active in the Democratic Party and destroy us. Well, paranoia runs deep in that party.
And it's catering, again, as you mentioned, to the corporations. These, you know, many of these corporations that are paying their employees minimum wage are making record profits. You know, example is the restaurant industry, like restaurants like McDonald's, where, you know, they're making great profits over the last couple of years. Restaurants have done well since the great economic recession back in 2007-2008, and they're doing well. And raising the minimum wage for their workers, $1.75, they're not exactly going to go broke. They're still going to make good profits.
Yeah, concerning the fact that if one individual comes into the store and buys a couple Big Macs, that's just about minimum wage right there.
Yeah, and you're right. And a lot of times that money will end up coming back to them somehow. It's good for worker retention as well. And then, you know, the Republican talking point is that this, John Boehner's talking point is it hurts the economy, but also that it's a job killer, even though there's no study to show that it kills jobs. And so this report, okay, goes by the GOP theory, just in case they want to go there. Instead, okay, you want to say it kills jobs? They took job losses into account, even though it would not happen based on no study that it would. Still, $28 billion in household spending. Increase in household spending by $28 billion, even with the GOP talking point.
You know, also, if you consider the large number of people working minimum wage in America at the restaurants, you know, even the servers, you know, theoretically they make more than minimum wage because you get tips. But let's just take chain restaurants like McDonald's, Burger King, Wendy's, whatever. And let's do the convenience stores and add in a few other places like maybe a little bit more than minimum wage at Walmart and Kmart and some other places, which don't even employ them full-time so they don't have to pay the medical and health benefits. But let's take all of this and put it together. By having a transient workforce, and that's really what we're dealing with at places like McDonald's and places that hire at minimum wage, they don't have any necessity to form a union. And that is a really, really bad word among Republicans. So if you've got somebody that comes in, works a couple of years at McDonald's, and goes off to college and that works somewhere else, it's hard to unionize those people.
That's a good point, and that's one thing that we're seeing the fast food industry, a lot of the fast food industry workers, create this movement called Fast Food Forward, where they're seeing protests in cities like New York, Detroit, Chicago, and Indiana, and some, just to name a few. In these cities, they're calling for or fighting for an increase in wages, sometimes one-day strikes or more, particularly one-day strikes where they walk out for a day. And they're getting a lot of attention locally, but not enough nationally. And that's what they're fighting for, increase in wages, health care, and pension. A living wage to be treated with dignity, but also trying to form their own union of fast food workers.
Exactly. And, you know, one of the other things that isn't brought out is that a lot of these franchises that hire at minimum wage, let's say that you're working at McDonald's, okay? We're just going to make that up. I don't want to pick on McDonald's over any of the other, really, places that do this. But a lot of these franchises charge the workers for their lunches or their dinners. So not only are they being paid minimum wage or slightly above that, they're also having to pay for the food that they eat.
Yeah, and that's a double insult. And then you have CEOs that are making outrageous bonuses. And then when you look at the income gap between the very top and bottom is at its worst in our country's history. And this sense over the last 30 years, to give some context, over the last 30 years, the average CEO, their CEO salary has risen 127 times faster than the average worker for that company.
Yeah, there's apparently some concept out there that I haven't really understood, that if you're in business and you become an executive in business, you're far more important than the workers. Now, that kind of attitude, this is possibly why we have so many problems in manufacturing, is because the workers figure, I will do a good job, but why should I? Because I'm really not getting the benefits that these executives are getting, and they're not even treating me right. So we could do a whole different show for like hours about the problems in manufacturing, and a lot of it relates to, as you said, the bosses making so much money and having so many benefits and so many golden parachutes and so many perks that it really smacks of elitism.
And many times these CEOs are just figureheads. Many times. And don't even do the work of the average Congress member.
Exactly. You know, there's only so many hours in a day. Now, CEOs and executive vice presidents and all those other titles, including public relations people, may make more money because, they're college trained and they're good people or whatever. But, you know, they really should have more time on the manufacturing floor, for instance, to see what it's like to spend a 40-hour work week working a back-break job with no real benefits.
And this would be good for many times these same jobs, but the local economies, small and large businesses, because most of the workers, when they get a raise in a minimum wage, they're going to spend it again back into the economy. And as you mentioned, sometimes at the same place that they work at.
Exactly. I have no idea why the Republicans are steadfastly, I mean, this is almost like a moral crisis to them to not raise the minimum wage. It doesn't really have a problem, a negative to them. When you get down to it, there's a few of those things that we've talked about, but deep down, raising it to even $9 an hour should not even be a problem, and it is a matter of conscience. Apparently the Republicans just don't have a conscience.
And it's about raising the cost of living. Congress does it for themselves, but you know, cost of living has not been adjusted for inflation and the rising prices for goods across the board. And based on cost of inflation, the average American worker is at 1968 levels. That's not good for the economy. That's not good for the country.
No, and it just puts us in a worse shape because people start defaulting on their house mortgages. They start finding out they can't afford adequate, rent. They can't afford health care. So, you know, when you can't afford the health care, and the Republicans, of course, the Republicans says no, despise Obamacare. But right now they can't afford health care, so what do? They go to the ER, and because they can't afford it, the taxpayer is paying for it.
And these same, many of these same governors and politicians in these states, the same ideology, are rejecting Medicaid expansion, which would cover a lot of these employees that fall in this income level.
Yeah, the disgusting part is that the Republicans really do not care about people. They care about corporations, which I guess, according to the Supreme Court, are now people.
So they do care about people, corporations.
Yes, exactly. As long as your name ends with an INC, you're a people.
They just don't want them to pay taxes like people.
That's right, yes. Why should we pay taxes? We can go to the Cayman Islands.
And you think that the Chamber of Commerce and many of these business groups would, you know, they're so looking into greed, it's so much about greed, they're not looking at the long term, that when you raise your workers' wages, many times workers stay. You know, let's say if you raise it to $11, you'll have a lot of employees that'll stay at your job, and possibly, you know, that would save you money because it costs money to keep retraining workers.
Well, exactly, and that's part of the problem that we're seeing anyhow is right now that, as you say, there's a certain learning curve. You know, it's like you just can't show up at a McDonald's and 10 minutes later know how to fry french fries, I guess. Whatever industry you're in, there's a learning curve, and sometimes people who've been there 5-10 years have all kinds of good ideas about how to improve the company, which benefits the CEOs and the other people there. You don't see much of that going on in companies that employ minimum wage people because they just don't care.
And when you treat your employees good, they feel like part of the company. As you mentioned, they'll do ideas, they'll go out and advertise for your company in the community, have good word of mouth, they won't bash the company. It benefits these same companies, and they just don't, I guess the greed is so much in their eyes, they're looking at the greed so much that they're biting themselves.
Well, I guess the concept here is that I'm making, let's just pretend, $200,000 a year, okay? Well, I really can't live on $200,000 a year. I need to have $300,000 a year. And once they get to $300,000, they need $400,000. It's like enough is never enough. This is also why I tend to shop at Costco rather than Sam's Club. Costco does treat their workers well. And the CEO seems to believe in having good workers and pays them well. And yet, it's the same kind of an operation as Sam's Club. So if Costco can do it, why can't Sam's Club?
And Costco is continuing to build and grow. And you're right, Costco pays their employees over $10, $12 an hour to start off, compared to Walmart, one of their competitors, or Sam's Club, where they start off at $7, $8 an hour, and many times they don't move an inch.
Exactly, and the thing is, that we know about is Costco also is union-friendly. Walmart, you even say union, you're out of there before you even finish the second syllable.
And it really shows with the products and the service when you compare both Walmart and Costco.
And I think you could also do a lot of comparison to, places like Home Depot. And, people go there because they say, well, it's really cheap. Well, gee, there's a reason why it's really cheap. The workers don't get paid a whole lot. And what upsets me is the reality of the people that run these companies don't see it. They see only, we got to be good to our stockholders. Well, the reason they created the company was not to benefit stockholders, but for other reasons. And I think a lot of companies and businesses have forgotten what those other reasons are.
And they're also forgetting that without the line workers, there is no Wendy's, there is no McDonald's, there is no Burger King, there is no Walmart, there is no Sam's Club down the road, in other places as well that are paying minimum wage. You know, if all the line workers today all just walked out, if they all walked out of Wendy's, walked out of Sam's Club, Walmart, or whatever, they all walked out of these stores. These stores would go into chaos. The CEO's not going to flip the burgers. The CEO's not going to clean the kitchen. The CEO's not going to stock the shelves. It's these workers, and it's time they start getting treated with respect because that's what they deserve.
Well, exactly. But see, I guess there's something about when you go to college, you realize that you are an important human being. I see it with journalists. It's sort of like they figure they have a degree. They're professionals, even though they're making a whole lot of money many times. And these journalists then inbox in a corporate public information officer and or somebody in PR or whatever. And, you know, I've seen journalists over and over again listen to these people. Now, they've been trained to be skeptical of anything in PR, but they're not really with our downsizing. So you take what you can get. Inbox somebody who's homeless or is talking about corruption in a workplace. I've seen so many journalists like, yeah, that guy doesn't dress right, or he doesn't look like a corporate executive. Now, they may not say that. That's really what's going on.
And they're really not in touch with reality, because the reality today is we have college graduates that are working at minimum wage.
That's right. Yes, it's sort of like driving taxi cabs, not because you enjoy driving a taxi cab, but because that's the job that you can get at the moment.
Yeah.
Now, I can understand why, you know, some actors become waiters and waitresses, and, you know, it gets them, you know, a chance to get a job. But, you know, there's a lot of waiters in New York that are making some good wages. A lot of actors are making some good wages, but overall they're not. When you think about minimum wage, you also have to think about people in the creative art who are not making minimum wage. And they probably should. I consider some people in the creative arts to be far more beneficial to society than any PR person or any corporation.
Well said. And, you know, raising the minimum wage, it's not just a moral issue, it's an economic issue, it's a dignity issue, it's a workers' rights issue, and it's something that affects us all. And for those that think, oh, you know, the minimum wage doesn't affect me, well, you're not looking at everything all together. It affects all of us. And that's one thing we've got to continue to do, is show the voters, show America, the American people, that everything is related. Everything is connected. Whether you think it does or not, how your neighbor does, how your fellow American does, affects you, too, in some way.
You know, I know there's an awful lot of people that live in communities where all you have are, you know, $500,000 houses, and they go all to the same country clubs, and they talk to the same people. It'd be nice to find some CEOs who actually live in a community where their workers live, and talk to their workers, and actually hear what they're having to say.
You know, that sounds a lot like Congress.
Yes, it does. I don't even know if we have a Congress anymore, because I haven't seen them do anything lately.
Yeah, it's pretty do-nothing. They deserve minimum wage. If their wages were based on performance, Boehner and Company would be making less than $7.25 an hour, and that's what they deserve. Walter, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. And you have a new book out called Fracking Pennsylvania. And for our listeners, how can they learn more about your new book?
Fracking Pennsylvania. All you have to do is go to Amazon.com or to your local store and find out what fracking is, and you'll find that it affects you no matter what state you're living in, and it'll affect your health and your environment. And it's not like something that corporations do. It's something that they do to you.
Well, and for our listeners, make sure to check that out. It's a great new book, Fracking Pennsylvania, on a very important subject. Walter, as always, it's been a pleasure, and thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much. We'll talk to you again.
Thanks. And we're about to head into a commercial break. You're listening to Inside Politics. We'll be right back after this commercial break.
And now...
Right now, I'm standing in a hole, a 300-foot deep hole to be exact. But even though I'm down here, I'm still connected to the entire job site because I have the new Sprint Direct Connect with apps like Workforce Locator that lets me know my foreman, Mike, is...
Yeah, I'm here.
And I have three times the coverage, so I know that my most important delivery...
Just arrived.
And as part of the fastest push-to-talk, I can assemble my team the moment I need them. Guys?
On our way.
So now I can focus on turning this hole into a hotel.
Upgrade to the new Dunn. The new Sprint Direct Connect with three times the coverage and access to the fastest push-to-talk experience nationwide. Now when you buy one Motorola Admiral Rugged smartphone for $49.99, you'll get one free. To upgrade, call 800-SPRINT-1 or visit a Sprint store near you. Offer ends 1/10/13. Offer available to corporate liable accounts. Excludes taxes. Two-year agreement. $36 activation. Up to $350 early termination fee for devices. Fastest claim based on initial setup time for push-to-talk calls originating in Nextel or Sprint-owned 3G coverage. Coverage claim based on comparison of Nextel National Network square miles to Sprint National Network inclusive of roaming. Restrictions apply. See store.
What's your plan B? Is what you're doing taking you toward or away from your goals? Are you fulfilled? You can start over. The past is the past. This is a revolution of hope. We provide a way for extra income part or full time with a mission and vision of hope designed to inspire. This is the greatest movement on earth. Make a commitment to yourself and ask, what do you want your life to be like? Join us in our revolution of hope. Go to tellmeplanb.com or call 803-431-0775.
Inside Politics with David Califf, the show that covers the issues that affect you. And hope everybody's having a great Monday. And before we get back into tonight's Monday edition of Inside Politics, wanted to talk about something in the news. It's from Pat Robertson from the 700 Club, Christian Evangelical preacher, so-called preacher. And Pat Robertson, you know, he's made a lot of hateful comments over the years about different groups, different Americans, about the country. The latest outrageous comment from Pat Robertson is that Facebook, well, I know Facebook has like and like buttons when you like something. He says Facebook should have a vomit button anytime that someone that is gay or a gay couple is a picture of someone that's gay is posted on Facebook. And this is supposed to be a man of the church. This is supposed to be a man of faith and good deeds, and so-called evangelical. And what I say about Pat Robertson is when I hear that a man, so-called man of the church is saying that he wants to vomit or see a social media outlet have a vomit button whenever a particular group's picture is on that particular site, that makes me want to do one thing, vomit. But tonight it's all about sequestration, better known as the Bain Equester. And the Bain Equester is, many of you know, is these automatic trigger cuts that go into effect on March the 1st. Went into effect on March 1st, $85 billion every year over the next 10 years. And from what we've seen over the last couple of months, it's now going on 4 months, since the Bain Equester went into effect. And what we've seen is that the media and Congress failed to talk about the Boehner Quester, unless it's airport delays, where it hurts the most wealthiest Americans. And now they're saying that many of the effects of the Boehner Quester that were predicted, including shows like ours, were overstated and that our predictions were wrong. Well, really? Maybe if you're only looking at, you know, airport delays and people at airports, but if you look at the average day American, it's affecting them, including, as we talked about last week, unemployment insurance. Over 500,000 people that are unemployed could see their benefits cut. States like New Jersey and Maryland already by almost 25%. And the news today that the Department of Defense, the Pentagon, put out that no one in the media is talking about, but thank goodness for good websites like Think Progress, over 600,000 civilian workers that are civilian contractors with the DOD, Department of Defense, are being furloughed. We're told today that they're being furloughed every week, one day, until September. That means for the next 3 months, they'll see a reduction in 20%. 20% in pay. For our listeners, imagine the next 3 months, you lose one-fifth of your take-home pay. One-fifth. And you're told to go home one day every week for the next 3 months without any type of pay. It's not a vacation. It's forced leave without pay. And the media, the Washington Post of all people, had the nerve to put out an article saying that the Boehner Quester, the effects, have been overstated and the prediction's wrong. Tell that to the 600,000 workers who received their furlough notices today. Tell that to the over 500,000 unemployed Americans that are seeing their unemployment benefits cut drastically, or seeing the duration of weeks cut. Or what we'll get into later in the show, people that benefit from these programs that are being cut. It matters to them. It may not matter to people that are living in the wealthiest parts of Washington or the wealthiest parts of some areas or that are not affected by this, but the average American, and especially low income and the poor, they're impacted. And that's not an overstatement. Joining me tonight to discuss this topic is Mr. Stuart Acock. He's a union organizer, activist, and author, and regular contributor to the show as well. And hello, Stuart. Thanks for joining us live on Inside Politics.
Thank you, David. It's great to be with you. As always, it's great to be with you. And this is a very important, topic that more and more people need to know about.
But, you know, we're overstating it, Stuart. According to the Washington Post, people like myself and others that were talking about that what this would do, that we overstated it, that we were wrong, our predictions were wrong. Well, today, just another example, 600,000 civilian employees that work for the DOD, Department of Defense, we're told they're getting they're part of the sequestration, the Boehner Quester. They're furloughed for 3 months.
We're not overstating it.
Yeah.
We're not overstating it at all. I mean, not only do those people who lose that one day of pay every week suffer, but so does our entire economy. They can't pay into our consumer demand and our entire economy, and we all suffer from what they lose. And sooner or later, our economic brain trust in the House, in the Senate, and in the White House need to understand that we need more consumer demand, and is a desperate situation without more consumer demand.
Yeah, that's well said. And even the IMF, International Monetary Fund, and they're, you know, pretty pro-business organization, the IMF says that these sequester cuts, including these DOD cuts, are devastating and wrong, and it's bad for economic growth for the U.S.
No, it's Exactly right. And whether it's from the IMF or from the international bank, we know that right now that the sequester is keeping the United States from moving forward, that the sequester is cutting jobs, particularly public sector jobs, and keeping the United States from moving forward, and it's holding us back from a full recovery.
It's economic sabotage, and you know an example.
It is economic sabotage.
You're right. An example is, you know, these employees that are furloughed, some listeners and may say, well, you know, it doesn't affect me. Why should I care? I don't work for the federal government. Well, you should, because when you have people, these workers, losing 20% in pay, that's money that's taken out of the economy. And
that's exactly right, David. Exactly right. That is money that is lost from the economy. That is money that is lost from consumer demand. That is money that is lost from not only the public sector, but the private sector in terms of consumer demand.
Yeah, an example is, you know, some of these workers may have been thinking about, let's say, buying a new car or a new house. Now with these furloughs, they're not going to do that. You know, that has an economic impact.
No, not only that, not only something as big as that as a new house or a new car, but daily purchases, groceries, vacations, whether or not you buy, what kind of meat you buy, cereal you buy, what kind of soup you buy, how much fresh vegetables do you buy? Do you buy a South Carolina watermelon? Do you buy, it's all down the line. It's not just the most important, but also, the most expensive, but also the least expensive that all of us depend on.
That's a good point. Then, not just government employees that are being hit, over 1 million, if you account today's development as well, but also, you look at, as we talked about on this show, the unemployed, over 500,000 unemployed people that are getting the federal unemployment insurance program, they're being hit hard. If you look at domestic violence victims, there's a domestic violence shelter in Las Vegas in this one article that have seen 15% cuts from federal monies to go along with the state cuts. I mean, that's domestic violence shelters across the country. You talk about, this is impacting housing vouchers.
And that's unbelievable. That's unbelievable. I mean, to cut domestic violence is just crazy, along with everything else we're cutting because of the sequester. But, the main, as you said, the main thing is that it is artificially cutting our entire budget, our entire economy. And is dragging us all down, and that's what we're seeing right now.
It's austerity at its worst. You know, not only is this austerity,
it is austerity at its worst, and it's austerity has failed in Europe, and it is failing in the United States.
It's atrocious, and there was one testimony from this one woman who was receiving housing vouchers, and she's seeing her housing voucher cut by a couple hundred dollars. That could be the difference between being able to pay rent for a house that you're renting and not. A couple hundred dollars, $200 or $300 cut to your housing voucher.
Absolutely. I mean, it's not just for her. It's not just that whether or not she can pay for a housing voucher, but it's whether or not she has enough to pay for groceries, if she can pay for what the rest of the economy needs to lift it up. I mean, that's the real problem with this sequester. It's the depression, the artificial depression in the economy that forces consumer demand down, consumer pay down, that forces less money into our economy.
And that is devastating, and we see the effects all the way down, including the school systems. Federal schools that are on military bases, kids of our soldiers that are serving right now, are men and women in uniform. Their children, many of them, attend elementary and middle school on base, on Army bases, and these schools are seeing drastic cuts as well. So I think it's atrocious with this Boehner question, and the media hasn't talked about this either, that the children of our men and women that are, many of them in Afghanistan and overseas, or that have fought in Iraq and other wars, that their children, the schools that their children go to are having cuts, automatic cuts. And these same politicians then have the nerve to talk about patriotism and supporting the troops. Yet you're for an austerity Boehner-Quester program, the sequester, that cuts funding for schools and teachers that our soldiers, the children of our soldiers, go to.
You're so right, David. These people pound their chests and flex their arms about being as patriotic as anybody, and then they allow the children of our patriots who are serving overseas to lose, to be cut back in terms of education, and be cut back in terms of what they need, and in the name of democracy, and it's just awful, and it's incredible, and it's very, very sad for America today.
And then we see them harp on not just supporting the troops, this whole Benghazi thing there, where nothing came out of it, even though they had 8 months of trying to find something. They could not find anything, except repeat the same questions for 8 months. And then, you know, these sequester cuts cut embassy security funding by $500 billion. And then they harp on the reason we need immigration reform. The nail biter, the selling point for immigration reform is border security. Yet this Boehner-Quester had furloughed immigration border agents. So everything that they say they're for,
it's crazy.
Everything that they say they're for, the Vanderquester cuts.
No, it is entirely crazy. I mean, I live in an area outside of Washington, D.C., which is filled with immigrants from Ethiopia and Nicaragua. And we have a beautiful community here. And they both want to cut off immigration and to cut off funding for immigration security. And it's just crazy. It just makes no sense at all.
None whatsoever. And then, you know, this Washington Post article and the conservative media all saying that, you know, these sequestration, Vanderquester cuts have not had the impact that they were supposed to, negative impact. I mean, how many examples do you need that we've gone through this show and we're not even pointing them all out during this segment? But, you know, domestic violence victims, the unemployed, school children and teachers at military bases, border agents, security funding. We haven't talked about the WIC program and other programs that have been cut. Food inspector services, and then 600,000 employees today alone that we heard about at the DOD, including over 1 million workers since April. Agencies having to shut down for a day or a couple of days. For this article to say that is, you know, I mean, are they only caring about the airport delays and how when it impacts the wealthy? So if it doesn't impact the wealthy, they don't care at all. The rest of the American people, we don't care if it cuts or impacts you in your everyday lives.
Well, you can go on and on. But the main problem with the sequestration is what it does to the overall economy.
Yeah.
It forces more unnecessary unemployment. It forces more public sector workers out of the economy. It forces more public sector workers to not have the means to bump up consumer demand. It forces more unemployed workers to sit on the sidelines of our economy, and it forces more, as you point out, it forces more private sector workers out of the economy as well. I mean, as many as there are individual crises, there are much more and much bigger employment crises for our economy because of the sequester.
It's self-inflicted wounds that a lot of the problems we're having today with the economic recovery is all Congress made, you know, whether it's these automatic trigger cuts or credit being downgraded or the fiscal cliff back in December. So many examples of government cuts to jobs at the state level and federal level. Everything that's had a negative impact in our economy over the last couple of years, particularly in this president's, since this president took over, has been inflicted by our own politicians. And
that's exactly right, David.
And it's one of the reasons why so many Americans are fed up with Washington, fed up with Congress, fed up with our politicians, and I actually think they want it that way. They want people to be so fed up with government, so fed up with politicians, that they're for cutting government and for privatizing government. And so when Boehner and company have a 9, now it's 9%, I didn't think it could get lower by from 10, but I looked at Real Clear Politics over the weekend, it's now at 9% approval rating. I actually think they like that. They like Congress having a 9% approval rating. They want, to quote Governor Norquist, they want to drown government in a bathtub. So if they get record low approval rating, that's what they like, because they want gridlock in Washington. They want people being hating and fed up with government. They were sent to Washington to do one thing, destroy government from the inside. And I don't know why these voters that vote for them, you don't vote, I mean, you wouldn't put in somebody at a job who wanted to destroy the workplace, but they're hiring people to go to Washington to destroy Washington.
And well, that's exactly right. I mean, they do want to go and drown the government in the bathtub. They do want to go and end any demand for government. They do want to destroy any reason for government, and they do want to go and make it all about, you know, you're on your own. You are not accountable to your brother or your sister. You're on your own.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, and that's one thing this show is never going to be about. You're not on your own on this show. We're all in this together. On this show, that's why I always say we don't have listeners, we have co-hosts. And you aren't a listener, you're my co-host, those of you listening to the show. So that's why I think we're all in this together, and you're not on your own, especially here on this show at Inside Politics. But Stuart, I want to thank you so much for coming on this show. It's been a pleasure, as always, and have a good week.
Thank you, David. As always, it's great to be with you.
Same here. Have a good one.
See ya.
And that's it for tonight's show. And, you know, I think that's something that the voters that are voting for some of these politicians, particularly in the GOP, have to look at. Why are you voting for people that want to go in and destroy the place that they're supposed to be working for? And that's a huge problem. And then for you, the person at the Washington Post, I forgot the name, that wrote that article, really? I mean, how many examples do you need of why these sequestration, better known as the Boehner sequester, how these cuts are affecting the American people? It's affecting them every day. I mean, do we have to type them up and send it to you guys? Because we got plenty of examples to choose from. But that's it for tonight's show. You can email the show at insidepolitics@mail.com, insidepolitics@ymail.com. We won't bite. And until next time, I'm out. Joe DiMaggio.